America Badass, Half Your Age, the song you wrote for Pamela Anderson after they broke up.
I remember that one.
Picture, Early Morning Stone Pimp, Devil Without a Cause, Somebody's Gotta Feel This. Midnight Train to Memphis.
There you go.
Blue Jeans and Rosary. I love both of those songs. We did it!
She
we got to 16! We did it! 1-0! Let's go!
Airing every day from noon to 3.
Blue Jeans and a Rosary.
I was playing that song this weekend.
That's a great song.
On my
song.
Playlist, my cleaning playlist.
On your cleaning playlist?
I mean, it's not called the cleaning playlist, but I got a playlist I play whenever I'm, you know, me and the lady are cleaning around the house and doing stuff. It's just...
Your cleaning playlist.
It's not a cleaning playlist,
he
but...
He had Lemon Pledge and a Dust Mop.
On 1340 WKGN.
Your housework playlist.
It's not just for housework. I mean, I got other stuff that just to vibe out to.
For, like, mopping and sweeping.
Hour three starting now here at the Fan Run Studios. Starting off hour three with some headlines. Cameron.
All right. The Jets have found the replacement to Mekhi Becton as they have signed veteran DeJuan Brown to a 2-year, $22 million deal. Basically, you get another tackle in there. Brown's like 36, 37, but he started last year. So just some veteran player to kind of.
Who did DeJuan Brown start for last year?
Was it the,
I think it was the
Ravens
Seahawks.
Oh, yeah, I think it's Seahawks, right, yeah.
Because I saw that someone else was talking about bringing him in, but he didn't want to sign to play for a team unless he was a guaranteed starter.
That makes sense, and obviously the Jets now have a hole on their offensive line, so he's going to plug in there and kind of, you know, give them somebody to, you know, kind of fill that gap of losing Becton, but, yeah. Jets is trying to save face a little bit on their offensive line, so we'll see how that goes. Some other injury
pretty
and stuff
signing.
Like that. Yeah, yeah, as far as
and
this
if
point
you're going to have
the,
to replace Mekhi Becton, like, yeah. That's about as good as you can do.
Just part of training camp, yeah, absolutely. So some other stuff. N'Keal Harry, the Bears receiver, is having a surgery for his high ankle sprain and is expected to be out for 8 weeks. So another guy down for Justin Fields over there when he already has a bunch of garbage at receiver.
Hey, a bunch of garbage.
I like Darnell Mooney.
And, yeah, I was about to say, and Darnell Mooney.
I like Cole Kmet.
I love Darnell Mooney.
Darnell Mooney is special.
I mean, at this point, this year. Is Velus Jones?
Velus is
he starting?
He could start.
He is going to start.
Because, like, Byron Pringle, they don't think he's going to be available week one.
I think the Bears love
Velus.
I think the Bears love Velus.
I mean, as they should, and he's a pretty pro-ready prospect, which when you're 25,
yeah.
Yeah, you need to be a pro-ready prospect, yeah. But he is. Who else is? Like?
I'm higher on the Bears
court
than a lot of people are.
I
yeah,
am, too.
You have
I
some weird
too.
Justin Fields thing.
I think Justin Fields has you can't get much lower than what happened last year, but I think he has a better second season. Obviously, they don't have great weapons, and they still have an offensive line that is atrocious. But I don't know. I think Fields has got something. He's a good playmaker. I think Mooney is slept on by a lot of people.
I agree.
I think he's a legitimate wide receiver one, and I don't think you have to
see that is the part that I agree with because I do love me some Darnell Mooney, but
I think they're just a couple years away from
when
continuing.
His
you know,
compliments when, are. I mean, a rookie Velus Jones Jr. That was you know a third round pick, and I guess a quantumist St. Brown.
Cole Kmet's a good tight end.
You got Daz Newsome, right. One of the old North Carolina receivers.
But then you add in that whole Roquan Smith situation, and you know that their performance for this year.
The Bears aren't close to being Super Bowl
with,
contenders or
no.
anything. But
I mean, their only hope is riding Kari Blossom game. Obviously,
I think they can be a lot better this year than people are giving them credit for.
I agree. I think the Bears can probably pull off like 7 wins, maybe this year, 6 or 7 wins. I think. And I think
I like their secondary. Like I like Jalen Johnson, I like Kyler Gordon, and I like Eddie Jackson.
Jaquan Brisker, I thought was a great pick too, out of Penn State.
Yeah, I don't
physical safety
love their front seven. Like obviously outside of Roquan, but you don't know what that's going to look like given his contract situation. I mean, you're having to start like Trevis Gibson, Justin Jones, like Angelo Blackson. That's not a very good defensive line.
I think that, I mean, Fields is really going to have to play on the run a lot this year. They don't have a great O-line. The defense is going to not be very good. They're going to be playing from behind a lot. But I think that'll give him a really good chance to kind of rack up a lot of stats. So, I mean, if you're looking for a fantasy sleeper, Justin Fields could be playing from behind a lot. He could be running. He could have a lot of rushing touchdowns. I think he's going to have a chance to kind of prove himself in that category. But it's not going to be a good year for the Bears, but I do think Justin Fields will at least hopefully be a little more comfortable this year.
And we never mentioned David Montgomery in that either, mentioning the Bears' weapons. I think he's a pretty solid running back for them, too. I think he can – he was doing pretty well last year and in the time that he had, and they were kind of splitting carries a little bit at the end there with Khalil Herbert, but you get that run
Don't try to sell me on the Bears, man. I don't believe in Justin Fields. I don't believe in the Bears. Really, I just believe in Darnell Mooney and Kari Blasengame and Velus Jones. Those are the three. All right. Continuing with headlines, though, a little update from FedEx Cup as they're at TPC Southwind, St. Jude Championship starting today. Just a little leaderboard update. At the top right now, he's finished his round. An opening round, 62, Siwoo Kim is 8 under.
Wow.
Yeah, followed by JJ Spawn at 7 under. And then in third, my guy, Tony Finau, 6 under, third place. He's going to go for the three-peat. He's going to find a way to win a FedEx Cup. I am so excited. I'm so excited to watch the rest of this tournament play out. Tony Finau is trying to make up for 4 years of gambling losses for me, and we're getting actually pretty close to breaking even.
He's probably come up pretty close now.
Like given the back-to-back wins, if he wins another one of these, I think we might break even. You also got JT Poston up there, the postman at 6 under, and Ricky Fowler. As the 125th man in the field, he's tied for fifth right now. He's 5 under, and he's still out on the course.
He's got one more hole left in him. Made an eagle on 16 there.
Yeah, but you've had some more notable names have some pretty iffy days, like Colin Morikawa's even par, Jordan Spieth even par, John Rahm just teed off. So, you know, we'll see what he's going to do today. Scottie Scheffler blew up early. He got back to 1 over. But I don't know. I always really enjoy this event just every year, the St. Jude Championship. I don't know. I like that course. I just think it's a fun event. So shout out to my boy Tony Finau towards the top of the leaderboard. Andy, you got any headlines?
Yeah. Earlier today, Josh Elander, former assistant coach for Tennessee baseball, has been promoted with a new title. He is now associate head coach of the baseball. So congratulations to Josh Elander, hitting coach.
Let's go.
Big time.
Shout out to him.
Kelsey Pope, wide receivers coach for Tennessee. He spoke with the media today, gave some good compliments to Jalen Hyatt, said he's gained 8 to 10 pounds this offseason.
Been the guy that we've really seen a lot of praise for lately. People are really liking what Jalen Hyatt's starting to turn into.
Yep, and then also gave high praise to Walker Merrill, saying that he works harder than anyone else on the field. So we could see a lot more Merrill this year.
He's been right there in that competition to start outside opposite of Cedric Tillman, especially. Brew McCoy's been unavailable now for a couple days.
Still waiting on his eligibility.
He's still waiting on his eligibility, too. But, I think he's had to miss a couple practices earlier this week, so...
Do they know
Walker Merrill kind of overlooked, I think by some Tennessee fans at time and really some media too, but he was getting some early playing time last year, and I felt like there was some high praise there, and from all reports, it seems like he has just a really good understanding of this offense, and like you said, I mean, right there, that quote, one of the hardest workers or the hardest worker on the team, so. I think you should be ready to see more of Walker Merrill than maybe some of you guys expect this year, and I'm excited about that. I like what Walker Merrill brings to the table a lot.
Do we know what the holdup is on Brew McCoy's eligibility?
Just, I guess, typical transfer
deals. Once you've gone back and forth and back and forth a little bit, you know, it gets a little bit harder.
Four times now?
I mean, I think, is it three transfers? It was two decommitments and like three transfers, maybe?
That sounds right. I think that is right.
So we'll see. You know, we'll see.
Kid's got talent, though. I'm excited to see what.
I mean, I assume he's still going to end up eligible. Like at this point, all of these guys pretty much are. And the NCAA is already talking about changing their rules here down the road to allow more than just the one time transfer immediate eligibility. So I imagine you'll get Brew McCoy in the fold to, buy that Ball State game. Cam, is there any more headlines we're missing?
Yeah, Tennessee baseball got a commitment from 2024 pitcher Bo Revord, a pitcher from Jefferson County High School in Dandridge, Tennessee. So he also plays shortstop over there at Jefferson County. So it's another commitment for Tennessee on the baseball side. I don't know much about the kid, but yeah, another commitment. Not too bad. Always good to get bodies in there. So some random hockey news. Las Vegas Golden Knights goalie Robert Lehner is expected to miss the entire season with an injury.
Oh, wow.
He has to undergo hip surgery this offseason. Timeline isn't exactly known, but they think it is going to be a whole season kind of deal. So that's tough news for him.
That's pretty crazy to get that kind of news in August. To be able to say that you're not going to be able to play in June.
Yeah, that is pretty wild. That's some serious hip issues if it takes that long to rehab from and all that. Almost a full year at that point. But, so tough news for them. But
This is a funny headline, the way this is phrased. Kentucky's John Calipari demands new practice facility. It's just one of the lead headlines on The Athletic right now.
Oh, yeah. Another headline. The trials have started for the cops that took pictures of the Kobe Bryant crash site and stuff like that.
Stuff coming out of that.
Yeah, so they are going through the trials of that right now. So obviously emotional for the Bryant family, having to kind of almost relive that situation again by going through the whole trials and things like that. So not great for them, but, maybe they'll get some sort of justice from this or whatever you call it. So, yep, they are investigating that right now. But, yeah, that was a weird situation that happened.
All right. Any more headlines for anyone?
Yeah, I got another one.
We all out.
Former Vol and then used to be current now, Houston gambler Mike Abernathy is now signing with the Packers. So there you go. NFL making some moves.
Let's go. All right, not a bad batch of headlines for a pretty slow Thursday, guys. I'm surprised we've gone a whole show with nothing breaking at all, even slightly significant within these 2.5 hours. But, yeah, not a bad batch of headlines there. Sam, go ahead and send us to break. All right, Andy. I hear you have a list for me.
We sure do.
I don't know if you know this or not. I'm a huge fan of lists.
Yeah.
They usually end up making me angry, so I don't actually know if I'm a big fan of lists, but I think I really like lists.
Are you good at guessing other people's lists?
Oh, I'm great at guessing other people's lists. What kind of list do we have?
So here we go. We've got college football's projected top 10 best offenses according to Brad Crawford of 247 Sports. This came out.
All right, let me get in the mind of Brad Crawford.
Came out late yesterday afternoon.
All right, I am Brad Crawford.
And you don't have to get them necessarily in order. Let's just see if you
I'll get them in order.
All right, well, you can try. But
the number one offense in college football is Ohio State.
All right, yeah, you're one for one.
The number two offense in college football is Alabama.
They are in the list, but they're not number two.
Huh.
So surely, you got two teams.
Surely it can't be who I think it is at number two. right?
See, I'm just saying, you're probably not going to be able to get him in order. See if you can get it 10.
I think that Tennessee could be right there at number two if it's not Alabama. Because if I were going to rank them, I would have Tennessee right up there, and that's that's fair. I'm going to throw it out there. Tennessee at two.
Tennessee is at two. They are two in this list.
The Tennessee Volunteers at two. I mean, you saw what they did in Josh Heupel's first year. Now you have the veteran quarterback that's in place already throughout the entire offseason. You know, you maybe inject a little bit more talent at some skill possessions in terms of at least depth. Like, I don't know. I'd still probably put Alabama ahead of them, but all right. So Tennessee at two. Let's go. Shout out Brad Crawford.
Yeah.
Does that mean Alabama's at three?
They're not at three.
This one's a bit
now,
of a shocker.
Yeah, the one at three is
the one that has
definitely
Jahmyr Gibbs, and
I'm with you.
And the
but
reigning
this
Heisman winner.
This is why I said it's hard to guess other people's lists. You don't know what's in
when
their
mind.
Well, that's why
no,
I was trying to get in Brad's
three,
mind.
Now, so three
is it,
probably
is three going to be Wake Forest?
Yes, three was Wake Forest, and that probably changes now. With,
that's what I forgot about. This could have been pre-Sam Hartman.
It looks like it was pre-Sam Hartman.
I mean, that is right there. You know, in the top three or four, Wake Forest. And the claw fence, the slow mesh. God, I love that slow mesh. I hope they still can put together a decent offense this year. So where was Alabama at?
Alabama's at four.
Okay, so the top four, Ohio State, Tennessee, Wake Forest, and Alabama. That's a four that, off the top of my head, really, I think I agree with. Maybe not the order. I think I would rank it Ohio State, Alabama, Tennessee, Wake Forest at four, but yeah, you know, that's a pretty good top four, Crawford, at least, again, if we're talking in the realm of Sam Hartman not being heard. But.
Yeah.
All right, so number five, that's where I think that's where you got to get in the head of these guys again, and I think that's everyone is loving USC right now. They love Caleb Williams. They love Jordan Addison. They love, the Oklahoma transfer they got that was – all first team last year, whose name is escaping me right now. Is USC right there at five?
USC's at five. Yep.
I feel like we're doing
you're doing really well. Right, you're doing really well. You haven't had a team that hasn't been in there.
There are five more, though.
There are five
that's
more.
That's where.
I mean, the top five is good.
This
You've
is
done
where
very well.
I think I'm going to get a little dicey.
It does get harder towards the end, for sure.
It's six, seven, eight, nine, ten.
Let's see if you can just get them.
Just get them in no particular
order. You don't
order.
Have to put them in order. Just see if you can get them.
Ooh, okay. I'm going to go with Texas just because they still have Xavier Worthy and they're going to have Quinn Ewers and Bijan Robinson. It's probably the best running back in the country.
Number nine. They're
number
in
nine?
There.
Number
nine? Yep.
Okay. Thinking through the SEC, Georgia statistically was that good of an offense last year, but I don't think anyone really holds them in that regard. I don't think it's them. You know, the rest of the East, there's no one that really stands out. You move over to the West, much like Tennessee's offense, you know, you're going to see Mississippi State put up a lot of numbers, but I don't think their numbers necessarily translate to success some of the way these other offenses do. Mississippi State's not on there, right?
Mississippi State's not on there.
Okay.
No.
And Ole Miss not either, just because they have to replace so much on offense. So, okay, I don't
not
think
Ole Miss,
there's another
but
SEC
there's,
team.
There is one SEC team on here.
Oh, wait, is it going to be Arkansas?
It's not Arkansas.
Not Arkansas. Are they going to put A&M on there?
It's not A&M.
Is it?
You've said this team, but you just technically haven't guessed it.
Is it Ole Miss?
No, not Ole Miss.
And it's not. Is it Georgia?
It is Georgia.
Okay.
Georgia's
that's
is
fair.
On this list.
That's fair. They should be included, I guess. You don't think of them in the same regard, like from an explosiveness standpoint, but the numbers don't lie, and the numbers say that they were a really good offense last year. Now, if you're projecting, you know, that same level or similar level of success that year, this year, that means you're probably projecting that defense to also be rather successful. Because I think that offense benefited so much from A, just never really having any pressure. I mean, when you just know that, hey, if this drive doesn't work out, my defense is going to get me the ball back in like 4 to 6 plays if they don't just score themselves. Like, it's a lot easier to play football when you're not operating under pressure. But Okay, Georgia on there. So right now we have Georgia. You said they were six?
Georgia's at eight.
At
so
eight.
We
so
got
we got
two teams above
we
Georgia.
We got eight and nine.
Two teams above Georgia, and then one team at 10 behind Georgia and Texas.
Okay. Okay. Is this just FBS?
Yes.
Yeah, so not just FBS. Is this just Power 5?
It looks like it's no. It's not just Power 5. So they've got other Division I teams on here. There's two.
Okay,
non-Power
so is Coastal
5
Carolina
teams.
Then on there?
Coastal Carolina is not on.
Well,
there.
I figured they'd include Chadwell and McCall and that offense they have. That's as creative there, as it is.
There is one more. I'm trying to give you the best hint I can.
Sam, I'd like to open the floor to you as well if you have any guesses here.
I think Sam's been looking at the list over there.
Yeah, I have been
Never
looking
mind.
At the list.
Never mind.
Here,
Sam, so. I'm going to close the door to you, cheater. Oh.
There are two teams in the state of Texas.
If I give you a hint, they're pretty difficult teams. I will lie.
There are two teams
UTSA.
In the state of Texas. No.
UTSA?
There's two teams in the state of Texas, and then one team in the Big 12.
So, okay. Are they going to include Oklahoma State?
Oklahoma State's not on
there. I was going to say, yeah, they didn't really do all that. But who else in the Big
12?
The
Big 12 team is a shock to me, to be honest.
The Big 12 team is a shock. I'm trying to think who's not in Texas or Oklahoma. Or is it just Oklahoma?
It's Oklahoma.
It is Oklahoma.
Actually, I agree with that. I for some reason, when I named USC, like it made me forget about Oklahoma because I just
because
now they're
half of their roster transferred to USC.
I love Dylan Gabriel.
I like Dylan Gabriel.
I think that Oklahoma has upgraded at the quarterback position by losing Caleb Williams and replacing him with Dylan Gabriel, at least for the immediate future. Obviously, Caleb Williams projects long term as a star, but Caleb Williams to me is getting more hype than he deserves at this point in his career. I think he still has some growing to do, and that was exemplified last year. I mean, it took him like accidentally fumbling against Kansas or like purposely whatever that weird play was against Kansas to beat him. I mean, he had games where he was having some pretty bad turnover issues against the best defenses he played last year. He kind of struggled, which isn't a bad thing when you're a freshman, but I think we're trying to make it where he's arrived and he hasn't quite arrived yet. So I like Dylan Gabriel for Oklahoma. I can get behind that. And then two Texas schools. I mean, like SMU still has Tanner Mordecai, but, you know, they're replacing a lot of receiver. I mean, Houston does have Clayton Tune, so I'm going to say that they're probably up there, actually. Is it?
Houston's number six.
Okay, yeah. I mean, they're going to have probably the best quarterback receiver duo in group of five, so that makes sense. So I have one more, and it's a Texas school.
Yes.
And it's not a Power 5 school.
Yes.
And I've already named SMU. And
well, you didn't technically guess SMU because I mean, you just said it, but it's SMU at 10.
It is SMU at 10.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Tanner Mordecai is enough for them to keep them at 10 despite the fact that they've lost like Reggie Robertson and everyone else. Okay.
They're at 10.
That's ridiculous. But okay, you know, pretty good list. Actually, you know, for most of these lists, I think they're pretty ridiculous. Yeah, Brad Crawford did a pretty good job. I think I agree with like 8 out of 10 there. Maybe
is
like
there,
9 out of 10.
Is there a glaring team that you would have put in there that wasn't?
I would think Coastal Carolina could potentially be involved there if, you know, if you're going down to the group of 5 level. I'd take them over SMU. From there, I mean,
I think I would rate that Texas offense a little bit higher than 9.
Yeah,
personally.
Just because
I think they definitely belong on
the
list.
The combination of Xavier Worthy and Bijan Robinson,
Isaiah Nior from Wyoming.
Like, yeah, that him too. I almost forgot about Nior. Like that to me is probably a top 5 offense.
Yeah,
like right around 5. Yeah.
I think I would probably.
I guess
swap
I don't know what that offensive line is shaping
Texas
up to
together.
Be. I appreciate the Houston respect. I had them at 11-1 this year, 12-1 after they won the American. But SMU to me is the one that I'm still a little iffy on. However, SMU plays Maryland week 3. Just random thought, bet that over. Because neither of those teams have a defense, but both of them can score. Actually, Maryland is a team that I would maybe consider. Just given all the weapons that they have at receiver, they got Copeland from Florida. Like they have Rakeem Jarrett. Talia Tagovailoa has proven himself as a passer. Like, Maryland's issues are entirely defensively. And I guess their offensive line, you know, has had some struggles at times, but they're going to have a pretty explosive offense. So I'd maybe include Maryland. But again, yeah, high praise to Brad Crawford there. That's a list I can appreciate. And I mean, Tennessee at number two. Do you think that we look back at the end of this season and think Tennessee is a top three? Will Tennessee have been a top three offense?
It's hard to say. Whatever happens during the season, but I think if you just look at the straight numbers and the straight style, I mean, it's hard not to put them in the top five. They probably have the best backfield returning in college football when you bring in a guy like Kendon Hooker and what he did last year, and then you add in, you know, the run game, and that you've got two guys that combined for over, 1,400 yards in total, Jabari Small, Jalen Wright, and then you add in this guy from Clemson as well. I think it's going to be a pretty full, heavy running back room to choose from. Cedric Tillman being one of the best returning wide receivers in the nation. You've got a lot of guys that expect to play alongside of him, and you still got some questions in that wide receiver room. And then, obviously, the offensive line, you've got some studs there. You know, it's not a full line yet. We're still, you know, trying to answer some questions there as well. But I think if you just look at the backfield especially, it's got to be one of the best backfields in the nation. Just pure athletes that are there. And then you add in a guy like Cedric Tillman. It's hard not to ignore that offense and how Josh Heupel's play style is. You mesh that all together, it's a pretty dangerous combination for any defense. So it's hard not to put them in any sort of top 10 list if you're talking about offenses. No one has that type of recipe, I don't think.
And there's even two freshman running backs that you can throw in that conversation about our backs.
Let's do it.
I'm ready to play this or that.
Okie dokie. First up we have, better year, Tua or Kirk Cousins?
All right. I'll take my guy Kirk Cousins. I think with him being in a brand new system, Kevin O'Connell's calling the plays. They're going to be throwing the ball a bit more. Dalvin Cook, I know they've been a big run game over Mike Zimmer in the past. He's been banged up injury-wise. You don't know how Dalvin's going to be. You want to try to keep him fresh. They're going to be passing the ball more. You've got maybe a top five receiver in the NFL in Justin Jefferson. You've got Adam Thielen, who is still an incredible wide receiver, too, to have on this team. It's a great receiving core. And I think the Vikings are a sleeper team in the NFC this year. And I think Kirk Cousins is going to be heaving the ball. He's a veteran. He's got more experience than Tua. He knows what it takes to get to the playoffs. He's won a playoff game. And I think he's going to be very confident with the group he has and the offense he has.
So we know that Tua has more raw ability than Kirk Cousins has ever had. Obviously, Kirk Cousins was, you know, a mundane prospect, you know, just a thought as a prospect. He was a fifth round pick of Washington at the time. You know, no one really thought much about him, and he was picked in the same draft as RG3. That's how they felt about him and his projectability
but
and his physical tools.
But he performed
tools.
Better. Than RG3.
We know that Tua, so that's why we know that Tua, we already know he has better physical tools. He was taken at the top of the draft. Now, Kirk Cousins, he's had a great career. I've always been a big fan of Kirk Cousins. Hey, you like that? Yeah, I do. I do, Kirk. You're like stopping at McDonald's on a road trip, Kirk. You know it's safe. You know you're not going to waver in quality. You can go get your McDouble. You can get your McChicken. It's going to taste all right. Your stomach's going to feel like 80% later. Like, you'll be all right. What you're getting with Tua, Tua's when you're driving along I-40 and you see a random, you know, on the little food at this exit sign, you see like a little random barbecue joint or a little random burger shack. It's the unknown. But we already know the tools are there. That's why they're there. That's why they've existed. And Tua's got those tools. But I'd rather have Tua this year. I think he's going to be the more successful quarterback. Now he has the weapons. He has the offensive mind. He's been stuck with defensive coaches as his head coach. Last year he had two coordinators in one year just at the same time. Like, they would alternate. There was no fluidity there. They were alternating their responsibilities. Their responsibilities were unclear. You know, Tua's been in a position where, you know, he hasn't been set up to succeed, and now he finally is. You know, now we've given him the weapons. We've given him Waddle. We've given him Tyreek. We have Raheem Mostert. Like, we have, you know, a slew of running backs in there. We have an improved offensive line, and, you know, we have some coaching that can actually help develop a quarterback, and the early returns have shown that we're seeing that improvement. You know, we're seeing Tua start to emerge. We I was talking about it earlier this show. Hey, I'm starting to actually see some throws that the Tua is making that are shocking me. You know, we saw him perfectly drop a ball into Tyreek against that Buccaneers secondary. They've been dotting up that Buccaneers secondary really this entire joint practice week. So, yeah, I think Tua is going to have the better year. He's on potentially the better team. He has the better weapons. He has the better offense around him, and he has a more innovative coach. So give me Tua. What you're going to get out of Kirk is average. And average isn't bad, but average is average.
Where did Mike McDaniel come from? San Francisco?
Correct.
They run the ball a lot?
Creatively.
I think it's going to be a pretty run-heavy offense, is it not? They got a lot of backs.
No, I don't think so. I think they're going to supplement the run game with the quick passing game.
Well, and, still pass the ball, but...
And that's what Tua's going... You know, that's really going to help Tua's stats.
I think we got a Miami run-heavy offense.
Statistically having
Vikings
a better season.
Pass-heavy offense. Two different sides.
I think we're going to see a lot of quick hitters to Tyreek and Jalen Waddle, and those are still going to count the same, whether he throws them in the air 20 yards or he throws them in the air 5 and Tyreek takes him 15 more. Statistically, yeah, I think Tua is going to have the better year because he's going to be in the more explosive offense. Cam, final ruling?
I'm going to go Charlie on this one.
Why?
Put some good points together. As far
he talked about McDonald's and barbecue.
I like the analogy there. I think they have similar weapons, and he is right. I think you know what you're going to get with Kirk Cousins, and, I mean, Tua has
it's
still
a different
won.
Year, though. He's got a new offense.
What he's
no, it's too late. I won. Sorry. Nope, on to the next one.
All right. Next up we got cookies or brownies.
I'll let you start this time.
You know, I'll go ahead and I'll admit this right off the top, just so we're operating in the same space here. The best brownie is better than the best cookie. I'll give you that. But cookies are better than brownies because of a multitude of factors. That includes consistency, diversity, temperature. Yeah, I see you giving me a weird look back there. Temperature is indeed a factor. So let me take you through those one at a time. First of all, cookies are considerably more consistent. You have more companies dedicated to cookies. Cookies are just, you know, more frequently purchased, created, and consumed. You know, I think it's cookies are a lot like pizza, you know, where even a bad cookie is a good cookie. I don't think you can say the same thing for a brownie, but you know what you're going to get with cookie. It's going to be a sweet treat. You know, it's going to be good. Whether it's store-bought, whether your grandmother made it, you're not going to be disappointed that you consumed a cookie. I mean, all around, cookies are more consistent. But what really makes them better than brownies is their diversity. Sure, I mean, I guess you could, you know, you could throw some chocolate chips in a brownie. You know, you could do a couple different things with a brownie, but you can really, really take cookies to the next level. You can get as creative as you want. There are infinite flavor possibilities when it comes to what you get in a cookie. You can put M&M's in there. You can put chocolate chips in there. You can put sprinkles on there. You can get sugar cookies, almond cookies, peanut butter cookies, snickerdoodles, oatmeal raisin, regular oatmeal. Oh, you can use cookies as buns for an ice cream sandwich. You can do all kinds of different things with cookies. Again, cookies you can never get tired of. There's always a new cookie out there to try, and you have all these different, you know, craft cookie shops. Crumble Cookie, we love Crumble Cookie. Crumble Cookie has infinite flavors just in their store that rotate, that rotate pretty consistently. I see boxes of Crumble Cookies, and there are cookies that I've never seen before, but they sure do look delicious. You don't see that with brownies. Brownies, they're pretty cut and dry. And finally, I moved to temperature. I think brownies are best when they're warm or close to warm. And so are cookies. But the difference is that a good room temperature cookie, a cookie that's been cooked and sat there for, you know, a good day or two, still a really good cookie. But when that brownie's not warm, when that's not, you know, still got that gooiness to it, it's just not quite the same. It just doesn't really hit. So that's why cookies are better than brownies.
I think everything that you said about a cookie could also you could also do with the brownie, and it would just taste better. You put ice cream with the brownie, and it tastes infinitely much better. And cookies can be dry. I hate a dry cookie.
So can brownies.
I know, but a dry brownie doesn't. It's not end all be all. And when it is warm with ice cream, there's no better combo, in my opinion. And you actually said the best brownie is better than the best cookie, so I feel I don't need to argue much more.
Was a bold move to start your argument, praising the other side.
Yeah, I regret that move.
Yeah, so I do have to give Charlie the loss on this one.
Damn, I really thought I put together a great argument there.
You went all
good.
In.
If I would have just Rocky said style, all yeah. of the same things,
yeah,
without
you just would have missed that
off.
One part. Yeah, I think you would have had it there.
You did go all in. That was impressive.
But all right, last one. Rather get hit by a pitch, or coming across that middle and you don't see that Ray Lewis type coming at you.
Both are terrible. Both are really bad. Yeah,
that's a common ground that we can reach.
Both are something that, you know, at my age now, I expect to never have to face, and I'm really happy about that. And I'm really glad that I never have to experience either. I don't know, but if I'm comparing the two, I'd definitely rather get hit by a pitch. Now, it would hurt. Get a Ben Joyce guy up there. You throw in a 105 at you, not going to feel good. But compare that to Aaron Donald, a guy who is, what, the most athletic, close to 300-pound guy I've ever seen, just full of muscle. For a guy like me who's, you know, 180, it's going to hurt a lot worse when you have a big guy barreling down at you, full tackle, you're hitting the ground. I get hit by a baseball, that's the size of me forming a ball with my fist. It's going to hit me in one spot. I probably won't. I might fall down, but like it'll just be in just a brief amount of pain, and it's going to leave a bruise, and it's probably going to stay there for a couple of days. But if I get tackled by Aaron Donald, I could be in the hospital. I mean, with pads on me or not, I
you
could be
up Ben
in the
Joyce.
Hospital.
If you get hit by a Ben Joyce pitch, I think you might end up in the hospital too.
Aaron Donald would tackle Ben Joyce, and he could be in the hospital too. I don't think a Ben Joyce fastball could hurt Aaron Donald.
Just complete sidebar. That's an experiment I'd be interested in.
who falls
just,
first?
It's just logic.
You just do a consecutive thing. Aaron
it's
Donald
like a,
keeps hitting
like
Ben
the
Joyce.
Slap contest that they
exactly.
do. Yeah.
Ben
except,
Joyce
yeah,
just
fastball,
throws 105 at his body.
Trucked.
And then
fastball
he just gets
back. Except the second fastball is probably not, if he can throw one, not going to be very good. I think I could take a hit from Aaron Donald though. I don't think I could take a fastball to
that
the
may
body.
Be the worst thing you've brought up all show. I don't think anybody's taking a hit from Aaron Donald.
I think I could. I feel confident in my ability to take
what
a hit.
What does a successful hit taken from Aaron Donald look like?
I get up.
Okay. And how much like time?
I think I would get up within 30 seconds.
Okay. I'd say that's success.
Yeah, I think I don't think there's a player in the NFL that I could take a hit from that I wouldn't be getting up almost immediately. I'm not saying it wouldn't hurt. But
interesting. Okay.
Let's make that happen. I think we should
just
make that happen.
You find a player that wants to hit me, I'll sign up. I'll all do right. it. Yeah, we can stream it. Back to the argument. You're just trying to distract me. I see what you're doing, Brock. Fastballs break bones. Like someone gets hit by a fastball, they end up on the IL. They miss a month. They miss a couple months. Someone gets hit hard, they just get clipped and put on TikTok. They're playing the next play. You know, Nick Westbrook-Akina is catching a ball over the middle, and you know, all of a sudden, Shaquille Leonard is putting a helmet through his numbers. Yeah, I mean, it's going to end up on a highlight tape. Like, you're going to get made fun of, but you're going to pop right back up. Like, people take those hits all the time in football, several instances a game, on a pretty consistent basis. But the danger of getting hit by a baseball, I think, is much more significant because, I mean, it's traveling on average upwards of 90 miles an hour. You know, if you're getting hit by a fastball, I mean, that thing's going to be humming. And if it catches any kind of bone, if it doesn't hit you on the fat, I mean, you're done for. Like, it is going to fracture. It's going to break. You know, you're going to suffer a pretty severe injury. Whereas, you know, it takes a very specific type of hit to cause a severe injury, you know, in football. It would just take a string of bad luck for you to get caught improperly. I also just think it would hurt less. Like, I think when you see a guy get hit by a baseball, there's a bruise by the time he's on first base. Like, it's swollen. You know, you don't have to see entire NFL players' bodies bruised all the time just from taking hits. Like, yeah, it's just a big hit. It's part of football. I've taken big hits. I've also been hit by, like, 95. I'd rather take another big hit than get hit by 95 again.
All right, boys. Two good arguments there. I do have to lean Charlie, though. With the breaking bone argument, it's a good argument. Not as many instances of people getting broken bones from the big linebacker hits as there is with the pitches. So I do got to lean Charlie on that one. So I'll give Charlie the dub here.
I usually don't win these. He always picks John no matter what, even though I'm always
It's because I'm new. It's because I'm new and I'm just here.
I'm an unbiased official.
That's not true. Good job, Andy. Sam, send us a break. Last call. Wrapping up the show on the other side. All right, time for the quickest last call ever. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at Linderman Sports Medicine. I'm not hurting today, but John probably is. He'd probably tell you about it if he were here. His thumb, his wrist, something. But hey, if you are not active right now because of some kind of discomfort or pain that's limiting any of your activities, then check out the amazing work being done by Dr. Laura Linderman at Linderman Sports Medicine. Located in Memphis, people are coming from all over Tennessee and beyond to get back in the game of life without surgery. So if you want to get back on your bike, back to the gym, walk in the park, or hey, just have a healthier lifestyle, you can visit LindermanSportsMedicine.com. They are powering the Fan Run Radio live stream. Again, LindermanSportsMedicine.com, LENDERMON SportsMedicine.com. All right, Cam, hit us with the quick last call story.
All right, I got an update on bouncy house injuries.
Yeah, I'm in. Yeah, stop. Give it to me. I want to hear it.
All right, we just had a study finished up about bounce houses since 2000.
Not a lot of injuries. We pro bouncy house here in this study.
Well, these are, it says wind has caused 479 injuries,
okay,
and 28 deaths since 2000 in bounce houses. So bounce houses aren't all fun and games.
Doesn't sound like it.
But I love a good bounce house. I encourage having a bounce house at every party.
I'm always scared, like, my knee's gonna give out in the bounce house.
Yeah, you can't get that weird, like,
like I'm putting a lot of trust into these knees in a bounce house. You know,
I love a good
bounce house. It's not solid ground. Putting a lot of force onto them, mm-hmm, when I'm jumping up and down, so that does make me a little nervous.
I have some friends that throw a Halloween party every year, and they're throwing one this year, and they have an obstacle course bounce house.
I love those.
Pumped.
I really love those.
I can't wait to be running through one of those. Hopefully there's no wind, because it may cause injuries, as said by this article.
If it's in a windy day, you better warn these people.
It says even minor wind speeds can pose a threat to this.
Can I show up to this party, just like race you real quick, and then just go back home?
I could probably get you an invite. You just got to swing by dodgeball a couple times. You could get in.
Well, I need to move dodgeball off of Wine Wednesday again.
That's true. That's fair. But I don't know. I'll see if I can swing you in, but I'm sure I can get you in there.
Sweet.
But yeah, pump for bounce houses. But yeah, apparently they're dangerous. Apparently the wind really, really messes these things.
They thought about just weighing them down with a little bit more.
According
weight
to this map, Tennessee doesn't have any incidents. Most of them are
actually
in
the safest bounce house state.
Yeah.
In America.
No surprise. Lots of them are in Florida. For some reason, Arizona has a ton as well,
it's
New
windy
Mexico.
There's not a lot to block the wind.
Yeah, fair. California as well, but Tennessee, Kentucky, and North
Michigan
Carolina are good.
Does Michigan have some?
Michigan actually doesn't, but they also apparently have strict regulations on bounce houses.
That makes sense. They're sticklers for bouncing up.
Yeah.
There.
Oh yeah. You gotta,
All right. Well, Cam, good show by you. Andy, good to get you back in here again. Sam, appreciate you as well. That'll do it for us on Talk Sports. Russell Smith and the Bear coming up next on The Drive. Stay locked in to Fan Run Radio.